I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars. Because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drumroll please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
Welcome to Random Movie Generator with... That sounded very professional. Welcome to Random Movie Generator with myself, David L. and Mr.
David William Nicholas Edwards here at the Ready.
Lovely to see you today, David.
Oh, lovely to see you. Every week is what keeps me going, you know, that we've made it to another Saturday morning and we can talk about cinema and push everything else aside and just focus on Hollywood.
When you say it keeps you going, don't put that responsibility on my shoulders.
No, not at all. It's not a responsibility I'm putting on your shoulders at all. Well, I said, is it a way, isn't it? It's like, come up with the goods. This is the carrot that keeps me going through Monday to Friday type of thing. But, you know, I think all of us need responsibilities, don't we? It keeps us in check.
Well, I've got to let people know, listening, we've got some sticky Wi-Fi issues, haven't we? Because I'm internet rubbish Airbnb, but we're gonna try our hardest to get a podcast out.
Absolutely. It sounds okay now. I think I can hear you now. So I think, you know, it should be all right. Definitely. Technology won't hold us back.
Well, I haven't seen you for a week. I guess you've been stuffing yourself full of movies.
Absolute. Lots of eyeball action. And alongside that, lots of sugary treats because it was Easter as well.
Your eyeballs must be knackered.
Oh, God. Absolutely exhausted. It's like Clockwork Orange. You know, when they had to keep them open with like kind of metal prizes type of thing, sort of metal clips. It's almost like that sometimes.
Think about all the images your eyes have.
Oh, God, it's just... And the endless cliches that your eyeballs constantly looking at. You know, you think, I've seen that before type of thing. Mm. But I think after a while, it's a case of your eyeballs become somewhat spoiled. If you know what I mean. Back in the 20s and 30s, they would have appreciated anything, just a train moving along the screen. But my eyeballs are just like constantly yawning and looking up at the ceiling, like, see you now, next.
I think you need one of those virtual reality headsets to give your eyeballs a little sexy pudding.
Oh, God, yeah, one of those Apple, they're called, pros type of thing. I'd be well up for that. Apparently, Apple have already given... cameras to people like John Faraday, the guy who's making the new Star Wars film, did Mandalorian. So you have the option whereby you can watch it as a normal film or you can watch it as a virtual reality film, as in like not just look at the characters but look around the canteen. I don't know how that will work.
What? Because
I know, yeah, apparently so. Apple have, and also even more importantly than film is sports. They've given these like Apple cameras that will link to their VR goggles, NBA. So they'll film them with these Apple cameras, and then you can watch basketball, but literally like you're sat there in the crowd, you know. So you're literally.
Oh my God!
I don't know how it works with cinema though, because cinema's all about pointification, isn't it? There's no use focusing on the band playing in the canteen in Star Wars if you're not looking at Harrison Ford saying his lines as Han Solo. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but if you're filming it with that in mind...
Yes, very true. Very, very true. So it'd be like a video game slash film, I guess.
I can't wait to see the podcast when that all kicks off.
It should be soon. I think they'll start bringing out a cheap version of the goggles quite soon for people to start checking out. Apparently, though, someone tried to watch Star Wars on the goggles, and they said they didn't even get to the Millennium Falcon because apparently it gives you bad neck ache at the moment because it's so heavy.
Right. Yeah, well, there'll come a time when there won't be these big ski goggles. They'll just be...
Or glasses, I think. I think that's what they want to be, literally just glasses. Because the whole idea of it is it's not actually virtual reality. It's like augmented reality. So ideally, it's a case of, yes, you can watch a film like Star Wars and be enveloped into it. But a lot of it is you can see your lounge, but then lots of things pop up, as you say, like a keyboard so you can write. They want to get rid of the Mac and the iPhone with it. So you can do phone, you can phone people, talk to them. It's basically going to be like Minority Report, when like Tom Cruise was wandering around and they were just like information. So you're going to be basically living inside a Mac, aren't you? You know, that paperclip character is going to turn up talking to you. Do you remember him? He'd ask you if you wanted help.
Oh, yeah. Was there a her?
No, there wasn't actually. He was only a paperclip bloke.
Because I think I could. Could you fall in love with a paperclip
Absolutely.
Lady?
Absolutely. Just the idea is about connecting, linking.
Could you marry a paperclip?
I think she'd help me with my admin and my general kind of where to put a punctuation every now and then. I think we'd work perfectly. I think...
Yeah, I'd love to kiss a paperclip.
Absolutely, that cold silver metal on your lips first in the morning. It might give you a cold sore, but it'd be worth it.
You'd lose her in the bed.
You would lose her in the bed. You have to get a metal detector and find her. Afterwards. But then you could...
Anyway, welcome to Random Movie Generator.
Paperclip ladies.
What movie did you go and see this week, David?
This week was slightly different because it was the Easter week and I took my nephew. It wasn't with Ryan. I took my nephew to see Kung Fu Panda 4. And it was a proper, as he likes to call it, a lad's day out type of thing. And plenty of treats at the party.
And, now I'm thinking you take your nephew, that gives you permission to go treat heavy.
Oh, massively. We went to Audi beforehand and just went pretty nuts, to tell you the truth. Because, I mean, you can get some just horrifically sugar-filled New York-style cookies for, like, I don't know, 95p. I was amazed by how cheap it is. They're Oreos, which are amazing, by the way, 45 pence. It's like I'm sponsored by them. But massive pack of Oreos, I'd say they're double cream, and 45p. I was looking at them thinking, blimey, we'll have a few of those, mate.
100%. Do you know what? I'm going to email Oreos.
Why not?
The amount of time we bloody go on about them. Jesus Christ, sling us something our way.
Absolutely. God. And they've got endless Oreo bits and pieces. So, I mean, God, I mean, the one thing that's annoying, though, that only seems to be out for Christmas is those snowflake ones. Do you know the ones that are pure white chocolate that I got you into and you get your builders, I think? They're gone. And I think I think they're only for Christmas. We're looking everywhere for those. But
Do you know what? We had some builders round this week. And we never have biscuits in the house. And Nomi went out. The builders were doing their work. I went up. And Nomi had left a plate of Oreo biscuits on the step that I wasn't allowed to touch.
Oh, God, how even... That just adds...
Imagine that, 17 Oreo biscuits on your porch that you can't touch.
Horrific. Absolutely. I mean, the willpower alone. Did you have any later on, or...?
I snapped a quarter off one half of an Oreo biscuit.
It's got to be done, isn't it? You've got to taste it. I mean, I had so many in the cinema that I had a technique where if you turn them counterclockwise opposite, you then open it, and then...
Well, like a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, like a Rubik's Cube, exactly like that. Like you're unleashing the actual kind of, the nectar within the wine type thing. And then you can just eat the cream, and then you have the black biscuit afterwards. Yeah, God, it was fantastic.
I've got an idea for the start of a film.
Oh, yes.
It's very basic, but you buy a pack of Oreos and you open one like a Rubik's Cube and you enter Oreo World.
There you go. Believe me, mate, this is the branding narrative storytelling in this Barbie world we're kind of existing in. I mean, that's the sort of stuff they want to hear. They don't want to hear about Taxi Driver or some character-driven drama. They want to literally hear, right, we own the rights to Evian Springwater. How can you turn it into a movie?
So, you, how was the cinema with your nephew? Busy?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Flippity skip. It was just, it was basically like, you know when the Muppets go to the cinema? And it's just surrounded by chickens. It was just, there was no etiquette at all. You just got to roll with it when it's in the middle of the afternoon.
And did you roll with it?
It took me a while to go into Yoda Eckhart mode and just go with the current of the wave. I was quite annoyed at times because you just got random kids wandering up to you, offering you pick the mix. You know, they're all very social, but it's just like, oh yeah, it's just a free-for-all. Kids running up and down the aisles, going to the toilet, all that sort of thing.
It sounds like your idea of hell.
Oh, it was. After a while, you just got to go. I think after a while, you look at the parents and you think, come on, I know it's a bit of a matinee, you know, they've had a lot of sugar, but, you know, try and keep some kind of control type of thing. Do you know what I mean? Because my nephew was very well behaved. Every now and then I'd suggest to my nephew next to me is to say, you know, he's a kid full of loads of energy, but he's sat down and he's watching the film. Do you know what I mean? At least.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he just, with it, it's just like, you know, the majority, it's just like, absolutely nuts.
Were you close to telling any of the children off?
I was trying to get eye contact with some of the parents when it turned into like a sports day, whereby the children aren't going to the toilet, they're literally just running up and down the aisle, running up and down the aisle, almost as though they're with their personal trainer. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, this is ridiculous now. Do you know what I mean? This is absolutely insane. This is like you're trying to break, you know, some kind of like, it's like an early stage of Gladiators on ITV or something, you know, trying to like beat the buzzer or something. Yeah, I started to get irritated by that. Massively so.
So you went to see Kung Fu Panda 4. I've only seen bits of Kung Fu Panda. Have you seen all 1, 2 and 3?
I've seen 1, I've seen 2, I've not seen 3, and I saw number 4 this week.
Right. What's it about? What is it about, David?
It's basically about the whole franchise is based on a character called Po, voiced by Jack Black. And like a lot of Jack Black's characters, he's a lovable character, but a bit of a loser. But it's almost like Karate Kid. He meets this kind of kung fu, very Buddhist spiritual master, voiced by Dustin Hoffman. I don't know the creature that the master is. It's kind of like a meerkat-esque kind of creature. And he teaches Po the legend of kung fu. And there's a lot of Eastern Buddhism wisdom within it. But unfortunately, by the fourth film, the franchise formula, that Karate Kid narrative, is very, very tired now. It doesn't know what it is. Dustin Hoffman's hardly in it now.
Me and Chris in the week went looking at actors in their 90s or 80s and 90s, and Dustin Hoffman was one of them. I couldn't believe how old he was now.
He was like very, so he's playing early 20s, but he was definitely very early 30s. And The Graduate was late 60s, wasn't it? It wasn't quite 70s. It was very late 60s. God almighty, 60s now. I mean, so it was the beginning of the Beatles, and Elvis was, you know, still in his prime.
Do you know who shocked me the most, David? Gene Hackman.
He's passed away now, hasn't he? Oh, no, he hasn't. That's Gene Wilde. Gene Hackman. He's retired. How's Gene Hackman now?
He's 94.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Well, when you think about it, Royal Tenenbaums came out in the early 2000s, in the early noughties, and he was playing a grand at an OAP then. Oh, no, 94. What a disaster.
I know.
I'll have to... I say it's a disaster, but then I want to Google it. It's just...
Yeah. Are you Googling it now?
I will do, definitely. If you don't mind me having a quick sneaky look. It's terrible in the sense of, oh, that sounds horrific, but then it's the first thing you want to look at. He has gone quiet. I wonder what was the last film he did when he decided, there's a lot of directors who have retired now. Brian De Palma retired last week, and Peter Weir did as well. Oh my lord. Oh no.
Walking with the Lady.
Yeah, oh my god.
I know. I think they said it's 20 years ago, his last film.
I didn't realise that at all. I thought it was maybe like 2-3 years ago.
It's nuts, isn't it?
It is nuts. I mean, when you do the maths in your head, it makes sense. But yes, it just makes you... I mean, you know, I'm 46 for crying out loud.
David, can I say now, I won't be doing a pod with you at that age.
Oh, flipping it. Well, I think with AI... and there's enough audio material out there, you'll be able to do a, it'll just be a machine, and it will just be doing an algorithm of the two, you know, you and me just sort of chatting away type of thing. It'll just be on an endless loop. Yeah, it seems to be 2004, the last time we did a film, which I thought it was around...
Life zooms by.
What were we talking about? 94. You'd be 94, I'd be 90. And we'd just be sat there kind of... or we'll just be listening to the AI
spring
machine.
Spring chicken, you'll be.
I know, but I never know at that age, in the sense of where my dad is sort of retirement home. And you get some people that are in their 70s that look like they're on death's door, you know, and then you get some that are in their 90s. And for some reason, their DNA is so good, they're still going swimming every morning.
Well, welcome to Random Movie Generation.
No, sorry.
No, it's my fault. It's my fault.
Really gone off subject. I think, yeah, after a while, it just depends what DNA lottery you've got. So I've gone back to it now. So
no, not
leave
at all.
It be.
Oh, so Kung Fu Panda 4. Kung Fu Panda 4. You found it tiring. Did your nephew, because I'm more interested in what your nephew thought. It's not for you, or is it?
Yeah, the first one was for me. The first one I found very engaging. I would say I could tell that... he was engaged, but he wasn't overwhelmed by it at all. I mean, like, he loves the Sing films, you know, by Gareth Jenning, which is, they're very impressive Sing films. He's, you know, he's just completely enamored by them. So, yeah, there are, I can tell when he's really interested. Basically, the animation for Kung Fu Panda 4 was amazing. Visually, it's really quite incredible. But the actual plot and narrative is that of a Saturday morning cartoon, 100%. It has none of the flash and veneer of like a Pixar movie. And DreamWorks even admitted that they were planning to sell it to a video streaming site, but they noticed there was a hole in the market, that there hadn't been a CGI family film out for a long time. So that's why they gave it a theatrical release. And it's done very well because of it, because there's a hole in it. Yeah, it's made a lot of money. A lot of money, because there's nothing to fill it at the moment. There's nothing for that demographic. So they've been very cynical in their doing. They knew it was a poor version of it. You know, to the extent that they were going to just pop on streaming because there's a bit of a following. But then they saw a gap in the theatrical windows. And and they've done incredibly well with it because there's nothing else out there. It's June 2 or Court Come. And, he's not going to sit down and watch a Shakespearean Lawrence of Arabia sci-fi movie. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, well, let's have a little think. People listening at home, wherever you're listening to this, in the bath. Loads of people listen to this in the bath, David.
I did not realise that. It's good to know.
Please, let's have a little guess at how many choc ices out of 5 David is going to give Kung Fu Panda 4. I'm going to have to... I can't show you because we're not using video, but I'll let you know what I'm going to go for. Okay, I've had a little think. I hope you've had a little think at home. Over to you, David. How many choc ices out of 5 are you going to give Kung Fu Panda 4?
Two. 100% two.
Oh, I went for 2.5.
Yeah, I mean, you could say 2.5 because the animation was impressive, but and they tried to bring back some of the earlier characters, some of the earlier villains, so it had like a legacy vibe to it for the Kung Fu Panda fans, but I was very bored. It was very basic. And the way they were trying to push in Buddhist Eastern wisdom within the narrative, it wasn't skillfully merged within the plot. They're just every now and then, you know, quote some kind of meditation piece or something. You know, you just think, well, you're just adding that to the narrative. You're not really saying anything within the larger plot. And yeah, okay, it's a bit
did the Eastern philosophy hit home with the gladiator training kids next year?
I don't think they watched any of it. I don't think for a second, because they were okay for the first 10-15 minutes. The film had its opportunity to hook them in, but it was Saturday morning, like watching Nickelodeon or something. That was the quality of the actual plot. There was nothing there. It wasn't Pixar level at all.
Well, David, thank you so much for this week's new movie review.
Thank you, sir. Thank you indeed.
Have you got any movie news this week, David, please?
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting movie news happening at the moment. Drew Goddard, who interestingly is a British scriptwriter, and he started off writing sitcoms for Channel 4, and then he moved to Hollywood, and he's done loads of impressive
scriptwriting.
I'm going to find out. It wasn't one that was a massive success. Do you know films While I'm Buried With? I've said that word completely wrong. What's that called?
Brett
Goldstein. Yeah, he did a really good interview with Drew Goddard. And he talked about his early days doing Channel 4 sitcoms. And I'm pretty sure he didn't get a second series. So even if I got the title, you wouldn't hear it. But he started in the UK. Then he went off into America and he did Marvel scripts. He wrote drafts for some of the Iron Man films, the original trilogy with Robert Downey Jr. He did script doctoring work for Ready Player One for Spielberg. And now he's been given the opportunity to actually reboot the whole Matrix franchise. Warner Brothers is going to reboot the whole of that with Drew Goddard focusing on it. The other big piece of news is this May, around Britain, they're filming 28 years later, and Cillian Murphy is going to be starring in it, and Jodie Comer is going to be the female lead in it as well. So that's Danny Boyle directing it, Alex Garland writing it, and Cillian Murphy starring in it.
Does that excite you?
Yeah, massive. That I think definitely, because when you think Alex Garland's great. He's got Civil War coming out next week, which looks brilliant. Do you know much about Civil War? That looks really interesting.
No, not at all.
So that's like almost in a parallel world to the one we're living in, whereby there's an actual modern-day American Civil War taking place. And it's very much like holding a mirror up to the whole Trump culture that we're existing in at the moment. So, you know, it's one of those films that you really get, which you've got like that sort of an adult kind of, you know, it's not just mainstream throwaway multiplex fun. It is a sort of an adult genre movie that's got a bit of an edge and darkness to it that is more that you get in the 70s and 80s. So, I mean, he's got that coming out. And he's just very good with kind of like genre, biting, dark movies. He did the Judge Dredd film that was extremely good. So he's writing 28 years later. Danny Boyle's back as director. That's a big deal. And Cillian Murphy could do anything at the moment, couldn't he, after Oppenheimer? So I think their concept must be very strong for him to say, yes, I'll reprise my role type of thing. So there's a lot of hope there. And the last thing I'll say, Denis Villeneuve, I can never say his surname. Denis
Villeneuve?
Villeneuve. Thank you very much. Villeneuve, you are completely right. Well done.
For fans of the pod, that's Villeneuve.
Get it right, because he's the director of all of them, the Dune director. His next film is going to be with Legendary Pictures again, who also made
Whose next film?
Denis Villeneuve. And French Canadian. And it's going to be about a new book that's just come out called Nuclear Missiles. And the book is non-fiction. And it's all about, they interview high members of the government in America and other parts of Europe. And it's what would happen seconds and minutes after detonating a nuclear bomb.
Is this a movie or a book, David? Sorry.
It's a book that's just been released. And Denis Villeneuve is going to be making it after June Messiah. So he's got one more film he's making next, which is apparently, it's either going to be an Arthur C. Clarke film. There's gossip that he might be directing the new James Bond, but a lot of people are saying that's just gossip. Then he's going to do June Messiah, because then the cast will have grown up and they'll be more mature. And then he's going to be doing this nuclear missile film, Legendary Pictures, once again.
That feels like an idea where you go, why hasn't that been focused on before?
Oh yeah, God, it sounds great. I'd be well up for that, massively. Mm. And also, apparently there's an American version of Threats called The Aftermath or something. Sorry, I can't remember the exact name of it.
God.
It starred the guy from Police Academy and three men and a baby. And it's something after, it's not The Day After Tomorrow, because that's obviously the Jake Gyllenhaal, Roland Emmerich movie. But it's supposed to be almost a spiritual sequel to that. So it's like a well-known Threads American TV movie that was about a nuclear bombing that came out in the 80s. And it was like Threads. A lot of people were incredibly scarred. And apparently it's the most watched TV movie ever.
I mean, what's it called?
I'll definitely find it out now, because I mean, Mark Kermode would never for a second leave you with, like, I can't remember the title, but
don't compare yourself to Mark Kermode.
Absolutely, in the sense that also you're just setting yourself up for a fall.
He might be comparing himself to you.
You never know. In a very different reality, it could be the case, you know, parallel.
As you scroll through your mobile phone, not focusing on the pod.
Thank God, The Day After. There we go, I've got it, The Day After. And it is on YouTube, the whole thing. And it's like Threads, it once again scarred the whole world.
Have you watched it?
I haven't, no. I've watched Threads, but I haven't watched it. But it's on YouTube, because people are like...
Would you watch it? Is it too much?
I think I would watch it, because I don't think it'll ever be as depressing. Because Threads was Ken Loach cinematography. So you had Woolworths, proper 80s settings, very relatable high street, but then a nuclear bomb. And also a lot of it was just the awful monotony of just endlessly being cold, trying to steal cans of beans off your neighbour. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, it wasn't like Mad Max, people running around with like, on roller boots with like nunchuckers swinging around their heads. There was nothing sexy about it. It was just like, this is just grim. You know what I mean? For some reason, your boiler hasn't worked. It's almost like when you've got a flat and your landlord just won't fix the boiler, and it's just like endlessly cold. You know, and
oh God, do you know what? I've just seen a photo of just a still from Threads, and it's just some woman with an 80s haircut looking scared.
Oh,
and it just looks really real.
And then they cut that same woman, they cut to her white, like, six stilettos, and then there's like a pool of urine around her stilettos, and then she drops her Tesco bag into the puddle of urine, and it's just like, oh God, it's just quite horrific. Absolutely. And then you get the
that's
movie. That's life there. It's more than the movie
general. Do you know what? I'm watching clips from it now, David. It looks really unsettling.
Have you ever seen it or not?
Yeah, like I saw it in the 80s and it really freaked me out. But even now, it's just...
It's very, very effective, because it's like you can hear on the radio just like the slow progression of the issue with the Russians, and then we're going to detonate the missile. But no one's really talking about it. They're more interested in like having their affairs or what they're going to have for Christmas. Just their like consumer human being kind of needs. Generally, they're not giving it their full attention, and it's just it's very real the way it's put together. It's just
I think you might have told me this already. You know, the director did The Bodyguard.
Yes, absolutely, he did.
100%. And LA Story.
Oh, I didn't know he did LA Story. Steve Martin. I didn't know that. That's interesting. The writer definitely did work with Ken Loach. So there is a Ken Loach link to it. I'm suddenly realizing that now. And it's got a real Kes vibe.
Well, is that the end of the news, David? Anything else newsworthy this week?
Oh, I'll tell you one other thing is Maggie Gyllenhaal, which is Jake Gyllenhaal's sister. She's doing a second movie she's directing. She did one with Olivia Colman and Jess Buckley a few years back. And it's called The Bride. And it's going to be a feminist reinterpretation of Frankenstein. Jess Buckley is playing the scientist. And she's got like sort of mad gothic hair. And Christian Bale is playing the monster. And he's got a very punk, almost Eminem tattoos on his head with like clippings on his forehead. You can find the photos and it looks interesting. It's called The Bride. Oh, the other thing that's interesting is Del Toro and James Cameron are going to be making The Fantastic Voyage. Do you know when they actually enter the human body? And
oh, beautiful. Because
Cameron's been working on that for 2 decades. But he's going to be...
What? Yeah, he's been... Well, like the numbskulls?
Yes, it's... I guess it's like the numbskulls, isn't it? It's more of a case of like a spaceship going through like blood vessels and things in that vein. And
that is heaven to me, David. That is heaven.
It does sound incredibly... So it's a bit like inner space type of vibe. And Del Toro is going to direct it, and Cameron is going to write and produce it because he says he's going to.
When's this happening?
Apparently, Del Toro has to do his version of Frankenstein. I'm suddenly realizing this now. There's going to be a lot of Frankenstein films. Maggie Gyllenhaal's got one coming out. Del Toro's got a Frankenstein movie coming out. He's then got another stop motion film he's going to make. And then after that, he's going to do The Fantastic Voyage with James Cameron. So it's quite a few years off. But it's definitely, they came together during a French film festival and announced it. So, I mean, that's going to be, it's quite a few years off, but apparently that's what's going to happen. And it looks as though Cameron's going to be working on the Avatars until like 2032. Because there was talk that Cameron was going to focus on his Hiroshima movie and give the Avatar films to other people, younger directors to focus on. But I think he's totally committed to it. He's got his whole family now in New Zealand, and he just works at the Weta Studios, and he's just committed to Avatar 24/7.
Well, David, thank you so much for this week's movie news.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Randomly chosen movie review.
So this week's randomly chosen movie review is...
Well, it's very apt because we spoke about Kung Fu Panda 4 earlier. Mm. And the film this week was Toy Story 3. The end of, some people would just say, there's not many perfect trilogies, are there? Do you know what I mean? But a lot of people do say that Toy Story is the perfect trilogy. They didn't drop the ball once. I mean, there has been a fourth one. But within that trilogy, because Godfather, they dropped the ball. Not a lot of people are fans of Return of the Jedi with Star Wars. I guess Lord of the Rings, that was consistent, but I guess they made them back to back. Back to the Future 3, not everyone's a fan of that, so it's very rare to have that perfect 3. Oh, I guess Batman, Chris Nolan's Batman managed that.
And my memory of Toy Story 3 is an absolute corker, but will it be a corker in David's mind? What's it about, please, David?
It's basically about Andy's now going to college, and there's a misunderstanding thing that Andy's putting them in a box to just get rid of them. But there's a misunderstanding that in actual fact, Andy was going to put them up in the attic to keep them for nostalgic reasons. But someone takes the box and donates the toys to a childcare kindergarten called the Sunny Home. And basically it's them having to adapt to this new environment and also deal with the idea of being rejected by Andy. And then they think, well, this is our new life, I guess. At least we've got new kids that are going to love us and play with us. But there's a great comedic moment where you see the kids during their break time and they're allowed to play with the toys and they're completely manic and feral and immediate.
Like your cinema.
Very.
Your cinema journey. Yeah.
Very similar. Exactly the same. I'd say yeah. Spot on. I mean, you know, it's over exaggerated for comedic reasons in the film, but I'd say it pretty much mirrored exactly. It's more like a documentary for me. It's exactly yeah. what I experienced in the cinema this week. But so I would say it's incredibly well structured and plotted. It's just an absolute masterclass. You can, in actual fact, Michael Arndt, A-R-N-D-T, actually has got an hour-long video tutorial.
A-R-N-D-T.
He wrote Little Miss Sunshine, and he's got lots of video tutorials about his writing ethic, his structure, and his formula, and also his experience of writing Toy Story 3, which he found a massive education. So
was he one of them, or was he the main writer?
He was the main writer for it. They got him involved, and you can tell, man.
Where can I get that, Doug?
YouTube. If you put Michael Arndt on there, and YouTube, put Toy Story 3. So, like, there's amusing scenarios, but at the same time, they're pushing the plot forward. Great use of flashbacks with the bear called Lutzo. And also, you know, Woody's great in the sense that he leaves the actual kindergarten, goes off on his own adventure, then he comes back. And the way they get him to leave and do his own thing and then come back is incredible. Just the structuring of it. The final act is incredibly dark and intense, particularly when the toys are near to being incinerated.
Oh, God. I remember that bit now. Isn't it?
Really, really. I'll tell you the other thing I completely forgot about. The film has loads of Barbie references. Barbie and Ken are in the film. Ken's got a very detailed part, and it's about his fascination and obsession with Barbie. And this is like 10 years before the Barbie phenomenon. Pixar were doing proper Barbie satire focusing on modern day gender representations. Way before Greta Gerwig's and Margot Robbie's film. So, yeah, I completely forgot. Michael Keaton does the voice of Ken. And, yeah, really finger on the pulse. Very interesting depiction of Ken as being obsessed by Barbie. A good take on gender representations. Definitely finger on the pop culture, on pulse of that way before the actual big movie came out. Yeah, the Barbie film that came out last summer. So on many elements I'd forgotten about how innovative it was. And also when Andy plays with the toys with Bonnie, the young girl who's going to take them away and you know, he's going to start a new life with the toys, is really good. And Andy kind of plays with her with the toys before he gets in the car and goes to college. It's a shame they had to make a fourth one in a way. I mean, the fourth one wasn't terrible.
I haven't seen it.
It's okay. They're doing a fifth one, apparently. I mean, the only reason is financially, isn't it? I think we spoke last week that Bob Iger, the CEO for Disney, he needs to come up with these tantalizing films that have got a predicted high box office. So the shares in Wall Street for Disney will rise. Because a lot of the finance is about prediction, isn't it? It's like, you know, what are you doing at the moment? Then in a year later, how high will your actual shares be? A lot of the time they look into the future too much. And that's the only reason they did a fourth and they're going to do a fifth Toy Story, because it is just the perfect trilogy. They want to watch so they don't muddy it in some way. Because, I mean, they're great films.
Well, for people listening at home and in the bath, because I know you're all in the bath.
Absolutely.
And we get loads of emails sent in saying, I love listening to David in the bath. I'm a bath man, I'm a bath woman, I'm a bath woman, I'm a bath man. I have to keep deleting them, actually. It's sort of pissing me off. But we get loads of emails, David, from bath people.
I didn't realise the whole bath thing was just a big, big part of it. So then they're eating their breakfast, sort of eating croissants, and just like an alligator just kind of like sizzling in hot water listening to us. Goodness me. Absolutely. So,
for everyone at home, please have a look at it or guess how many choc ices out of five David's going to give Toy Story 3. I've had my guess in my head. You have your guess at home. Is he going to give it the full five? Or maybe not. Maybe something didn't quite click with him, but we'll find out now. David, how many choc ices out of five are you going to give Toy Story 3?
I think definitely a 5 out of 5. It's more than a film. It's a lesson about pop culture, how to execute it properly. It really is.
David, thank you so much. I'm really glad you enjoyed it. How can you not? That is a movie where not for one second are you looking at the clock.
Oh, no, God, no. Just continuing. It's like Back to the Future, you know. It's just cause and effect, cause and effect. And like any good blockbuster film, and they always give Die Hard an example for this, you should be like telling at least 3 bits of story information in every scene. You know, you're keeping the audience engaged, pushing the plot forward, a bit of character information, and maybe setups that will be dealt with later on. And they do that perfectly. Absolutely.
Well, David, thank you so much for this week's randomly chosen movie review.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Do you mean that?
I genuinely do. I'm slightly jealous that I'm not in the bath. If I wasn't surrounded by so much electricity.
Well, do next week in the bath.
Well, the thing is, all you need is your laptop to slip. I think it'd be like when Sean Connery chucked a toaster in the bath of a Russian spy, you would get electrocuted. Or you just have like a soggy laptop at the end of a podcast. But then again, I'm not the audience. I'm not here to relax in the water. I'm here to do the job.
No, you've got work to do. They can relax.
I can have the bath afterwards and listen to Commode in the soap suds.
Thank you, David.
Not a problem, though. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Random movie generator. Movie tips. Recommendation.
So this week's, have you got any movie tips, recommendations?
Yes, I will, in actual fact. I visited a relative's house and they had something that I'd only slightly heard about, but not massively. And I was like, all right, okay. They've got BFI streaming sites. So the BFI have got their own streaming site. Apparently you get it free for 14 days and it's £5 a month. And it's really good. You know, real early stuff like Neil by Mouth and Scum, you know, the early Ray Winston stuff. But also things like Beast that I watched with my relative. And it was a case of, which is Jess Buckley's first film, set in Jersey, low budget British film. And it's about a serial killer in the island of Jersey.
And what?
Yeah, it's really good. It's
very... Hang on. I've read the book about the Beast of Jersey. It's not about that dude, is it?
I don't know. I don't know if it's based on the actual book or not. Because that's a good thing about BFI. A lot of them are very kind of these low-budget, quirky...
It is. It's about the Beast of Jersey.
It's very good, and she's really, really good in it. I was really impressed by it.
David, I read that book when I was 15. I was on a cricket tour in Jersey. I was 14 or 15. And I read the book about the Beast of Jersey coming in to children's windows and snatching them from their beds.
Oh, my God!
I didn't realise they'd made a film about it.
Yes, they have, and it's very good. It's Jess Buckley, so like her first feature film debut. The Beast of Jersey, very dark.
It's horrendous.
Trying to think the other ones. I made a screenshot of other ones that are potentially... the other thing on BBC BFI Player is you get loads of intros from well-known film critics. So Mark Kermode's got loads of interviews on there, and you can get a Mark Kermode intro before the film, which obviously definitely adds to your enjoyment of the movie. It gives you the idea of the background and the inspiration behind it, which is absolutely superb. So, and it's only £5, and you can get it free for 14 days beforehand. And a whole range of pieces of British cinema. And also they've got things like Iron Claw, Anatomy of a Fall, other big American movies as well. They've got that kind of low budget indie feel. So if you want to move away from the mainstream, it's definitely one to go for. Loads to choose.
Well, I keep thinking about The Beast, to be honest with you, because it had made such an impression on me, and the fact that there's a decent movie about that, I'm going to have to watch it.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Definitely check it out, 100%.
So anyway, that's BFI Streaming, and yep, that's David's... Loads of films.
Absolutely.
That's David's recommendation for this week.
Definitely my recommendation, and I think it's one of those things where there's so much to look at, you find yourself just scrolling through the menu more than actually watching the films. I was sat there and just constantly thinking, oh, I've forgotten about that. Oh, that's supposed to be good. Oh, you get to see loads of directors or actors' first movies before they... Oh, there was a very good one for Florence Pugh, Lady Macbeth. So before she turned into a Marvel action star, she did a Lady Macbeth film that's supposed to be very good. That's on there. So it's these very early movies that gotten their big agents and their big breaks.
Well, thank you, David, for this week's movie tips.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for allowing me to share it, giving me a platform to express myself.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Random Movie Generator. Welcome.
Right, okay, so this week's randomly chosen movie, Finley's here. He's very quiet today, Finley. His eyeballs are rolling about in his head, I'm not sure why. And when I say his eyeballs, could you explain to the listener what the robot Finley's eyes look like?
Yeah, basically they're kind of ping pong balls that we've got like permanent markers and created like pupils in between, but every now and then they get stuck, and it looks like he's looking down at the floor and then looking up at the ceiling. So the left eye's looking down, the right eye's looking up, and then every now and then we've got to like knocking over the head with like a rolled up newspaper, like a telegraph, and then the eyes go back into kind of balance mode.
Okay.
If that makes any sense. That's the idea.
Right. Okay. So Finley's ready to pick a movie for you to review next week. Let's go for it. Let's tell or press the button, whatever you want to do, and let's get the genre of the first movie you might be reviewing next week.
Perfect stuff. Stop.
Comedy.
Wonderful. Can't knock that.
And the year or years.
Stop.
2000 to 2010.
It's a good time, the old noughties.
Finley, please, could you randomly create four movies, comedy movies from 2000 to 2010? Finley has done, and is spinning them around in his butt, as in his bottom, mechanical bottom, and it's down to you, David, to tell Finley when to stop spinning.
Stop.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, is that the Tim Burton one? Yes,
Johnny
it was.
Johnny Depp, yeah, yeah.
That would be interesting. Do you know what? I don't know if I've actually seen that. Do you know one of those films that have become such a part? It's like his Alice in Wonderland. I don't think I've actually seen it. I think I worked at a cinema when it was on. but never actually sat down and watched it. So yeah, that is interesting.
Okay, well, let's find the second genre of the movie that you might be reviewing next week. Finley's ready. Are you ready, David?
Over to you. Stop.
Romance.
Lovely. That's what cinema's all about. People coming together.
And now the year or years of this romantic movie. Over to you.
Stop.
1980 to 1990.
That's a good old era for the wine that is cinema. That's a good old decade.
Finley, please create four romantic movies between 1980 to 1990. He has done. He's spinning them around in his bottom. And now it's down to you, David, to tell him to stop spinning, please.
Stop.
Flashdance.
Oh, I've never seen Flashdance ever. Music videos?
Yeah.
So it's basically like a
These are good ones this week.
They really are, definitely. Yeah. They're films that I should have watched, really. So that's
like, lovely.
She works in an industrial complex, isn't she, with like a blowtorch, but she dances in the evenings. Yeah. That's all I can...
Yeah, exactly.
Flashdance would be very good, because that's like the beginning of high concept 80s cinema, isn't it? It was a film like a music video with a very basic narrative, and that went on to influence films like Top Gun. And it's Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer again, I believe.
Okay.
So that will be a really interesting one to look at.
Right, now let's choose the genre of the third movie that you might be reviewing next week. Over to you, David. Thank you.
Stop.
Music.
Lovely.
Or not. Now the year or years... 1900 to 1950.
Blimey.
Oh my god.
Flippity skip. That could be a definite handful.
So, Finley has come up with four musical movies between 1900 and 1950. And it's over to you, David, to tell him to when to stop spinning.
Stop.
The Three Caballeros.
Like, what is that? The Three Caballeros?
The Three Caballeros.
Goodness me, well, I've not heard of that one before. 1944. It's not any good.
I think it's animation.
I mean, 1944 animation. Oh, that's when did Snow White come out? Was that, And Seven Dwarfs, because that was the first animated film, wasn't it?
I've heard of the Three Caballeros.
Gosh, well, there we go. There's,
Okay, Walt Never Disney, heard that in produced my life. By Walt Disney.
Oh, it's produced by, it's Walt Disney it's produced by, that's to say, if it wasn't Walt Disney back then. It's a Walt Disney film, that's interesting, so that could be interesting. I thought anything that came out of Disney, particularly in the early years, is just crowned as a classic, isn't it? But that is interesting. Okay, I mean, I'll Google that, whatever, to see what that's about.
Can I just... Somewhat complicated plot of the Three Caballeros was not made... Was not what made... It's controversial, this film, for some reason. I don't know anything about it.
What's
the most controversial animated Disney movies ever.
Bizarre. And is it an hour and a half kind of film? Because sometimes it might just be a short animated movie.
Are you worried?
I am slightly. Is it going to be well,
haven't got it yet. You haven't got it yet. So you might like
Very
it.
True. You never know.
1 hour 11. Piece of piss.
There you go. 1 hour 11.
Okay. So
that's bizarre. Yeah.
So I've given each movie an A, a B, and a C. I've jumbled them up, or have I? Yes, I have. No, I haven't. Or have I? And now it's over to you, David, to blindfoldedly choose which movie you are going to be reviewing next week. Is it going to be A, B, or C?
He's going to be... C.
The Three Caballeros.
Oh my gosh, that is, how do you spell that?
C-A-B, is it C-A-B-A-L-L-E-R-O-S?
Yeah, so here we go, The Three Caballeros.
Caballeros.
Right, okay, here we go. Yeah, news to, I've never heard of this in my life. They came out in 44. Well, there we go. That's an education itself. I'll be fascinated to, I'll be genuinely fascinated to see what this is all about.
Oh,
it's almost
a questionable portrayal of Mexican culture.
Yeah, well, a lot of their films have come under that microscope again. And there's like, when I did Peter Pan, I could see a lot of the way they depicted a lot of the kind of tribal Indian characters on the island. Definitely that would be questionable now, massively, in a big, big way. So I can see why that's the case.
That's what we got next week.
Looking forward to it, sir. Looking forward to it.
Well, thank you very much, everybody.
I never knew you existed.
No. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening today. We're going to go into the Patreon shed. If you're interested in coming to the Patreon shed with us, then please do. But for now, we're going to say goodbye. Thank you. If you like the pod, please leave nice comments and rate it. It does 100% help us.
Me now. Absolutely. And, there we go. We are back.
Apparently it helps us.
Absolutely. Please subscribe. I'm going to do a Disney deep dive for tomorrow. And show your love through internet subscriptions. It's like a digital snog in the world of the internet. If you can subscribe to our cinema cult, that'd be wonderful.
Thank you, David, for this. And let's go into the Patreon shed now. Bye-bye, everyone. Random movie generator.